Good morning. So I'm going to be reading from a passage from Numbers, chapter 33, verses 50 to 53. So I don't know if you want to, I'll give you a bit of time to turn to that if you want. It says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their metal images and demolish all their high places. And you shall take possession of the land and settle in it, for I have given the land to you to possess it." So I guess the main point I'll be touching on is that last part. Although all of it's relevant, you know, God speaking to them and whatnot, that's all very relevant. But particularly I'll be focusing on the last part in verse 53, where it says, "And you shall take possession of the land," verses 52, "Then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their metal images and demolish all their high places." Yeah, there was a lot of pagan practices and there was a lot of people in the land who were not following God. They were actually far, far from following God. And when God called the Israelites to take the land and to remove all these things and just because he wants us to be set apart as holy, and not to mix with all of these people practicing pagan rituals and all this stuff. So he wanted them to be a holy people, not defiled, and that was the whole point of that was the whole purpose, or that was a big emphasis on moving into the lands. And so the Israelites were obviously God's chosen people. And the promised land was the land of Canaan. That was the land that God promised to give to the Israelites. And he had also promised it long ago to Abraham. And God was using Moses. God had chosen Moses to be the leader of the Israelites, to lead them into this promised land. And God had promised the Israelites that they would deliver them, that he would help them deliver them into the land. He would facilitate that and be with them in every step of that, including the removing of the inhabitants and all these sinful practices. Now this is not an easy task, of course. This was going to be very difficult. I mean, I know none of us have ever been in a battle before, in a war, you know, in a war situation, a theater of war. But it's a very daunting thing, and it's difficult, and it requires a deliberate action, I guess, on our parts, through the Spirit working through us to accomplish that. But it does require us to move and to take action. And I can just imagine, you know, what that must have been like for them. Pretty overwhelming. But the thing is, God had promised the Israelites that he would do this. So it's a faith, you know, it's a faith thing, a lot of emphasis on faith. If we were to read further on, we would see that the Israelites would enter the promised land, but they would inevitably, or they would, you would eventually see that they did not drive out all the inhabitants out of the land. And there were still, they removed some of them, but not all of them. And some of them stayed for good. And this was a huge thorn in their side later on, not so much right away, but God's commandment was to remove all the inhabitants of the land, and they disobeyed God in that way. And eventually it kind of, you know, it bit them later on, if we were to read further on. But and so this idea of, or this commandment from God to, or this picture of God asking the Israelites, or commanding the Israelites to drive out the inhabitants in the Promised Land, is similar to our needing to drive out the sin in our life. It's very similar. It's a similar call. And of course, like I say, God wants us to be a holy people, not like the world, not like the culture around us, but to be set apart as holy. And in that way, it's similar. But this is hard. This is hard. It's not natural to our human nature, especially when the culture tells you it's okay. Even in Christian culture, it's even harder, even more so. It's harder when in Christian culture, they make it seem as though it's not as important to get rid of certain sins, because I mean, that's what makes I'm talking about culturally acceptable sins here. And that's what makes a culturally acceptable sin dangerous, is that it's not looked as serious as other sins. So we tend to commit them more without really thinking. And that's the danger of it. But we have to remember that God loves us, and he wants the best for us always. But he wants us to be faithful too. He wants us to be faithful. He wants us to obey him. And God makes promises in his word. And he asks us to follow those. And, you know, that's the thing. But God, not for one second ever is God wanting anything but the best for us. And as hard and difficult as it is to try to live a pure life, especially in this culture right now, in the world that we live in right now, it's especially hard. You stick out like a sore thumb. But, you know, we have to have faith, and we have to believe that he wants the best for us. And if we do it, things will work out, because God has never, he's never failed to deliver his promise. And his promise is, if we do those, if we remove the sin from our life, if we live in a way that honors him, loving him first and foremost, things will work out. And we have to trust that. So the principle here is loving God. Loving God means keeping his commandments. So I'll just quickly go into, I'll list off a handful of sins which are now more culturally acceptable than other sins. And I won't go into too much depth here, but I'll go through this to kind of highlight something that I'll be touching upon in a little bit here. So, some of the things, just a handful of things. So, I mean, gluttony is the first one. I would say that's way up there. And all of these I'm guilty of committing for sure. You know, because in Ezekiel 16 verses 49, it says, Sodom's sins were pride, gluttony, laziness, while the poor and needy suffered outside her door. So I think sometimes this can kind of be a fuzzy thing in our minds, and we kind of make light of it. You know, we kind of joke around and we say, I ate so much that I was, you know, I couldn't even hang out with my friend anymore. I had to go home, or I rolled home instead of walked home, you know. I'm so full. But it's like, I don't know, we make light of it sometimes, you know. And really, God is not pleased with that. And it's so hard to see that as just as weighty as other sins. And you know, worry, again, totally guilty of committing this. We're kind of doubting God's provision, you know. We're failing to really look at what he's done in the past and find, you know, tangible hope and comfort in that. Instead, we worry about our situation. We worry about, you know, our finances and our careers and our relationships, and so easy to do, you know. And not to say that, you know, that's, I mean, we all fall short in that, and sometimes you worry and you can't not worry. You just can't seem to rid yourself of it. But this is just another thing that we have to be mindful of, and just trying to better understand who God really is, and have that confidence slowly grow. But yeah, again, kind of acceptable, right? A lot of the time, discontentment, just, you know, your circumstances being, oh, I think my internet just died. Oh no, we're good. Not being satisfied with your situation in life. Nothing seems to be changing. But we all go through seasons of change, and we all go through wilderness. You know, we all have our own wilderness experiences. And often that's a time where we have to just be faithful to God. And that's a time that we can have our faith grow. Although sometimes it doesn't really seem like, you know, a neat opportunity to grow in your faith. Sometimes it just seems like a situation you want to move, you know, you want to get beyond, but that's not always God's thought. But just being, you know, trying to be content in all things, again, very difficult, but that happens as we, I think, mature as Christians, which is a slow process, but just understanding who God is, right? Pride, I mean, yeah, I won't go into too much detail and all these others. I mean, there's a lot of them, but, you know, pride, selfishness is a huge one, you know, especially in this culture, selfishness, you know. I was just talking to somebody yesterday, and it's so funny. And again, it's, you know, we walk by people and say, oh, how's it going? You know, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a term that we use, and I get that. It's kind of turned into its own acceptable kind of greeting thing, but, you know, but it's almost a way to kind of get out of a situation as fast as you can, you know, hey, how's it going? And you're walking, and then you're kind of like half hoping that they'll ask you to, because then you can kind of finish the conversation and you can kind of go your own way. You know, it's a lack of care for other people. Again, I'm super guilty of it. You know, how do you even go up to somebody and actually genuinely ask them how they're doing? You almost have to, you know, really make it, you know, it's not, when somebody asks you how you're doing, it's not really, you don't really expect them to actually tell you, because they don't think you actually care, you know. And it's just the world that we live in right now. It's like your default expectation is they don't care and they'll be burdened, which a lot of the time that's the case. Lack of self-control, huge one. Self-control is like, you know, almost becoming a, you know, like this obscure notion, to a lot of the, you know, younger folk, especially, you know, why would you want to control yourself? Why wouldn't you just follow your heart? And why wouldn't you just do what seems and feels right? Or God calls us to something quite different than that. Anger, slander is a huge one. I see that a lot. You know, I mean, picture someone in your life who most people just don't like. And imagine, I mean, it seems pretty acceptable that you would kind of talk about them behind their back a little bit to somebody else who might share those same thoughts with you, or share those same feelings with you. And you're not being malicious to them, no, that you would never do that, but you would kind of talk poorly about them, and not in a way, not in a loving way, in a way which is satisfying to you. You get a rise out of talking about other people, because you can connect with other people. You know, that's a way of relating to other people. Talking behind other people's backs, and it's just slander. I mean, that's a huge one. I see that a lot. I see that one a ton. And really, we should be loving to everyone, and we should not, you know, whether we're talking about somebody, and it's whether it's true or not, you know, whether they are that way or not, we should be speaking in a loving way, with a loving heart as we speak, not in a malicious way, hopefully not, but also not in a way which would be, you know, satisfying to us. Oh yeah, you know, I've got some information to tell you about this guy. I got some dirt on this guy. I want to tell you, because that feels good, because we're humans. But we have to be mindful of that. Gossip, same thing. Worldliness, you know, being caught up in the world, putting too much focus on the things of the world. Yeah, he's usually guilty of this. And we have to be really honest with ourselves, and we can't be vague about that. You know, like, you know, what do you like more than God? What do you like more than serving God? I mean, that's a weighty question, but I think we have to be really, really honest with ourselves as you know, and go, okay, well, you know, what actually, where are my affections at? You know, like what's taking place of God in my heart? That's a difficult question. But we're called to examine ourselves and be honest with ourselves, right? Being judgmental, of course, right? Envy, wanting something that somebody has, possessions or character or something, right? Lying, white lies, you know, unthankfulness. That's an easy one to fall into, you know, not really being thankful for what you have. Very easy to get caught up in that. So anyways, those are just some sins that I know, it's so easy to commit. I commit them so easily. But you know, it's God's commandment. We should be obeying God. And, these are the things that God, wants us to put off. You know, he wants us to put on our new nature. If we are in fact saved and we have Christ in us, we should be striving to put on our new nature, which is a, you know, which is something that we do, consciously. You know, we're always have, the flesh is always battling against our fleshly nature. Sinful nature is always battling against the spirit in us. And, you know, we don't just passively go about living life hoping that sin will be removed because we have Christ in us. It's a thing that we have to be mindful of. And sometimes it just requires that kind of reminder, being more mindful of it. So anyways, you know, the question is, you know, why should we remove these sins from our life? Why should we strive to do that? It's definitely not to get what we want out of life, to have maybe a successful family, or to have a good career where you make lots of money, or to, you know, just to get something out of life. And we also shouldn't be doing it as a way of checking the box, you know, okay, I've done this, this, and this, this, and this today. You know, I've done well today. I feel good about my performance as a Christian today. I refrained from these sins. I was disciplined in that. And, you know, I feel good about that. I feel really good about that, and I want to keep doing it. It's okay to feel good about that, but it's like what I'm trying to say is why should we try to live a holy life, removing these sins from our life, obeying God? Why should we obey God? And the, our motivation should be different than those examples I gave. But I'll get into that at the end there. But so I'm just gonna, if you just follow along with me here, I'm just gonna kind of lay out a handful of scenarios, and just follow me as I kind of articulate them. So think about someone in your life that you really care about, like maybe your spouse, or a really good friend, or anybody, you know, anybody in your life. Try to picture try to picture that person. And imagine that that person in your life does something really nice for you, something very kind and loving to you, but you don't deserve it. You know, you don't deserve it. So I'll give some scenarios. So just maybe this has happened to you. I don't know, but maybe somebody comes home and they've bought something for you, which is really valuable to you. You know, maybe it's something big that you've always wanted, something, I don't know. Or maybe it's just something small, you know, like some flowers or something like that. And, you know, you feel really good about that. You feel really cared for, but you don't deserve it because you were just rotten the night before. You know, you were, you know, you don't deserve that kind of love. Or maybe you're going through a difficult time in your life, and someone, that person that you love, has come up to you and encourages you, and gives you some real loving words, which would help you overcome maybe an uncertainty you had in your mind about something, or an insecurity, and they just really lifted you up with their kind words. But you don't deserve it because the thing you said to them the night before was not deserving of that kind of love, but yet they did it anyways. Or maybe someone comes home or maybe you come home and maybe the kitchen is completely clean, the floors are vacuumed, you know, the windows are washed, dinner's cooked, the dishes are done, and you're absolutely shocked, and you're filled with affection for this person in your life who you love, whoever that is, probably your spouse in that case. But you don't deserve it, you know, because of what you did to them maybe a week prior or the night before or whatever. Or maybe you come home and your spouse gives you a hug, and you know, they say, hey, do you want to just hang out for a while, and we'll go and just spend some time with each other, and maybe they hold you on the couch for a while, and you're just kind of hanging out, and you're feeling their love, and but you don't deserve it, you know, because of what you've done to them maybe. and you're kind of, I mean, that's significant, you know, a significant feeling that you would get from that. I'm just going to think of another one, but you know, I'm just trying to lay out some scenarios that you may have encountered in your life. But either way, you know, that kind of love feels really good to receive. And you know, we have the propensity to be able to love human beings, you know, that much. We have the propensity to feel very fondly towards someone that we love. But we have to know that they're so imperfect, you know. They hurt us all the time. In fact, the people who are close to us often hurt us the most, unfortunately, which is just the way it goes. But you know, they're sinful, they're imperfect. Yet we can feel great love for people, and especially when they show us that kind of unconditional, self-sacrificing love. You know, you can just imagine how that would feel if any number one of those things that I mentioned were done to you when you didn't deserve it, from a person who you already care for. You already care for them. They didn't need to do those things for you to love them. But then that, you know, you just they do this thing, they do this kind thing to you that you don't deserve, and you know, you love them even more. You know, what would your response want? What do you think your response would be? You know, or what kind of feeling would you get from that? You would want to love them back in some way. I mean, you would have this desire to just go, I want to love this person more. I don't deserve any of this. And they're showing me this kind of self-sacrificing love. But again, like we're imperfect, but we still have the propensity to love people who are perfect that much. So now just consider God's love for us. You know, So his love for us is not imperfect. His love for us is perfectly perfect. You know, there's nothing wrong. There's no imperfection to his love for us. And it's infinitely more. He loves us infinitely more than the person in our life who we love the most. His ability to consistently do the right thing for us and just the consistency of his love to us is infinitely more significant than what any human can give to us. But not only that, you have to look at what God did for us. You know, he sent his only son to die for us. And this is absolutely huge. I mean, we'll never understand we'll never understand how much God really does love us, there's a verse in Ephesians 3 verses 18 to 19 says, and may you have the power to understand, as all God's people should, how wide, how long, how high, how deep his love is. And may you experience the love of Christ, though it is too great to understand fully. You know, we can't fully understand his love. We'll never understand the fullness of it. So it's hard to get into that mindset as a Christian, because, human beings are pretty tangible. You know, you get real feelings from people you love when they do good things to you, nice things to you, when they show you unconditional love. But God's love is far deeper than that, but it's, we can't see him, it's all by faith. And that's incredibly difficult, to love God in the same way that we, it's often a lot harder to love God, more than the people in our life who are kind of tangible and there, and who do, we see their works and their love for us in a tangible way, but we have to at least strive to continually grow in our understanding of how much God loves us, preaching the gospel to ourselves every day, actually thinking about what Christ's death on the cross means and the significance of that, and reading about God in the Bible, understanding his character better. And I think the more we understand who God is, the more inclined we will be to love him as we ought to. And we should always be growing in our love for God. But just to kind of try to get more familiar throughout our life, more familiar with God's love for us by reading the Word. And that's a slow process. But it's so in John, 1 John 5:3, it says, loving God means keeping his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. So that's it. God, to love God means to keep his commandments. And that's his number one commandment to us, love me with all your heart, soul, and mind, and strength. And we have to be loving God. That's what he wants us to do, first and foremost. And part of that is obeying his commandments. And part of that is removing the sin from our life. But we don't remove sin from our life because it's a check in the box, or because good things will happen to us, or we'll get what we want. But we have to remove the sin in our life because we love out of a love. Our removing sins from our life comes from a place of love and gratitude for God, and nothing more. We can't do anything to pay him back. Our becoming more holy, that process should be done because we love God, simply that, nothing more. So we have to try to understand how much he loves us, and how perfect his love for us. And we do that by diving into the Word, just re-familiarizing ourselves with his character and everything about him. The story of Jesus, God's insane mercy on the people of of the Israelites in the Old Testament, just the consistent mercy and love that he shows and the chances he gives us. Eventually we get more familiar with all this stuff about God's character and what he's done. Our love for him should grow, and our desire to remove these impurities from us, from ourselves, will be, hopefully will grow, and we'll have a better ability to do that. Just to be mindful of these sins, which are so, they creep into our life, and it's so easy to not be, they're often not on our radar as often, and it's just something to be very mindful of. So that's what I wanted to share. So I'll
great.
I'll give it to Steve, and yeah.